ॐ सहना भवतु सहना भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्ति. This was meditation is in line with what the way that Ramana is teaching, so we'll see that today. Okay, we're on verse 5. Satyam Rishava Chiridam Jadamba. Satyam Rishava Chiridam Jadamba. Dukam Sukam Veti Mudha Vivadaha. Dukam Sukam Veti Mudha Vivadaha. Adrishta Loka Niraham Pratiti.
Adrishta Loka Niraham Pratiti.
Niraham Pratitihi. Niraham Pratitihi. Nishta Vikalpa Paramakileshta.
Nishta
Vikalpa Paramakileshta. Satyam Mrsha Va. Chid idam jadamba dukham sukham va iti muda vivadaha adrishta loka niraham pratitihi nishta. See that repha in the bottom line? Pratitihi, that's a basarga. Whenever it's in pratitihi,
oh, yeah.
Nishta avikalpa parama akila ishta. I break the sandhi for that compound. So let's go through and understand the Sanskrit of the verse and then I'll explain this. Satyam, the truth. We have to explain that, of course, but satyam, the truth. Or mrsha, that which is false. Whether something is true or false. Mrsha means really mitya. Is this true? Is this real? True in the sense of real? Is it real? Or is it mitya? So again, we always have to remember what satyam and mitya means, just quickly. Satyam, what is real, is that which cannot be negated in past, present, or future. So as it is, it is. It doesn't have a beginning, it doesn't have an end, it doesn't come into being, it doesn't go out of being, it's timeless, it's nityam, free from time. That is satyam. Anything else is what we call mitya. If it doesn't fulfill that definition of being existence itself without a beginning or an end, then it's considered mitya, considered apparent reality or dependent reality, because anything that is not, that comes into being and goes out of being has non-existence on either side of it. And so it must be dependent upon something else for its being. Like, for instance, I always use the example of the clay pot. Right? The pot is totally dependent on the clay for its being. So the clay is satyam, the pot is mitya, because it has a dependent reality, doesn't have any existence of its own. So here what Ramana is saying, this question, is this satyam or mitya? Is this creation satyam or mitya? Are you satyam or mitya? Are you real or are you dependent? Is your being dependent upon something else or is it self-evident? So this question, is this real or is it mitya? Does it enjoy a dependent reality like the pot and the clay? Or you can say idam. Idam means this. Is this creation, this set of experience that we have, is it consciousness? Is it consciousness? Or is all of this that we experience jada? Means it's inert. I can be conscious, but everything I experience is jada, is inert. Or is it consciousness too? So is this satyam, is this real? Or is it a dependent reality? Is it all of this just consciousness, or is it inert? Is it dukkha by nature? Or is it sukha? Is it dukkha? Is it sorrow? Is it pain? Or is it pleasure? He says, all of these, mudha vivadaha, all of these debates, all of these type of debates are mudha. Means they're useless. They don't end up anywhere. these big discussions, because the Bhagavad Vedanta is big discussions, satyam or mithya. But Ramana is saying these type of debates and inquiries, all of this, you know, consciousness, jada, all of this, and dukkha, sukha, dukkha, all of these inquiries, they're mutta. They don't go anywhere. Useless, he says. He says, adrishta loka means that loka, that place, that world, which is adrishta, cannot be objectified, cannot be seen. That abode, that loka, which is adrishta. Drishta means it can be seen, like through my eyes, or something that can be objectified is adrishta. It's drishta. This is adrishta loka. That place which cannot be objectified, which is nir aham pratitihi, which shines. Pratitihi means it shines, but without any ahankara, without any I thought. Nir means without. Nir aham pratitihi, without any ahankara, without any I notion, or without any I thought. That nishta. Nishta means that state of being, that nishta, which is avikalpa. Avikalpa means avikalpa means like a division or a question, a duality. It seems to be dried off. A family member. Avikalpa is a division. Like if I were to ask, is this conscious or inert? That's a vikalpa. I have a question. You know, is this satyam? Is it mitya? That's a vikalpa. You know, is it sukha or is it dukkha? What is its really nature? Is it ananda? Is this all ananda or is this really all dukkha? What is it really? These are vikalpas, either ors. Is it this or is it that? Is it this or is it that? It says this nishta is a vikalpa. These vikalpas don't exist. These, you know, this question, is it this or that? Is this better? Is that better? This is not there. And it's this nishta which is free of these vikalpas, which is a state of being that is not, which is a place, a loka. Place is a bad word, but anyway, I'll unfold it. Is a place or a world that is not something objectifiable, where there is no ahankara at all. Right? There's no niraham pratitihi. It is, and it is shining without an ahankara and without any of these vikalpas. That is parama akila ishta. That is what is desired. It's that nishta that is desired by, that's the, what is supremely desired, right, by everyone. All of these vadas, all of these different schools of thought that are doing all of this debate, where they want to resolve is in that place where this debate doesn't even exist, where there isn't even a hankara. There's not even a hankara there. There's no objectification. And so I want to kind of explain this from Ramana's perspective. I was trying to, we'll see in his next verse also, he's doing this perspective also. If I use the example of the meadow imagination and say in a dream, for instance, or in a vivid imagination, I am the character in the meadow who is questioning the reality of the meadow, right, and the creator of the meadow. Those questions are all meaningful and interesting for the person who is in the meadow, right? Who created this meadow? Who am I? Right? Who am I? Who created this beautiful meadow? What is the reality of this meadow? You know? How do I relate to the meadow? Is there a lord of the meadow? These are all vikalpas. They're all inquiries. They're all desired to be known by all of these different spiritual disciplines. And in fact, when I teach this one class at CIS, this Eastern Theories of Self-Mind and Nature, the one class I teach there, we're looking at these different darshanas, especially Buddhism, you know, and Buddhism and Sankhya and Yoga and Advaita Vedanta, and there's other ones too. All of them are answering and dealing with these questions. You know, and any spiritual discipline is dealing with these questions. You as a jiva within the dream, within the creation, are dealing with these questions. So in the empirical order of reality, whether it's the person in the imagined meadow, or you within this dual creation, all of these questions, you know, are meaningful. Who am I? What am I doing here? What is the nature of this creation? Is there a God or not? You know, is all of this real? Is this a real substance like the Sankhyas? We'll say this world that we experience is jada. It is inert. It is prakriti. It is a real substance. And you, each one of you, are purusha. You, each one of you, are a conscious being that is actually, by your very nature, in reality, free from this inert substance. And so what you have to do with this inert substance that's being blessed by the purusha is bring it into a state of absolute equipoise and silence so that the prakriti can no longer have to be experienced by the purusha. Okay, so they're dealing with consciousness, satyam and mithya, and what is the, you know, what is, how can I free myself from this type of reality? And the yoga will come in and say something, the Bauddha, the Buddhist will say something, Advaita Vedanta is saying something, trying to make you understand the nature of this reality from the standpoint of a jiva in it who is experiencing it. And when you're experiencing it as a jiva, as an individual within this reality, then also you're looking at yourself as a limited being, trying to understand your relationship to the creation. Okay? So you've got the Jiva, Jagat, Ishwara. So this trilogy, Jiva, Jagat, Ishwara, is what all of the different darshanas in India, the Shuddha darshanas, the major philosophical schools in India, they're all dealing with this. They may be dealing with it in a way that is not harmonious with the Vedas, or which is something where they're logically weak, and then they will debate with each other and quarrel and get into not just quarrels, but into really questioning it. But now for Ramana, you remember, most of you probably know the story of Ramana. For him, Ramana could care less about any of this. But why? Because he spent his time just simply in really Nirvikalpa Samadhi. Nirvikalpa Samadhi means this. As a jiva, I'm sitting here with my five sense organs or open, engaged in the world. Or I'm lost in my mind worrying about this or that or the other thing or daydreaming or whatever. I'm engaged in subject-object duality. Whereas for Ramana, he wasn't really, for many, many years, he was not engaged in it. He was engaged in deep contemplation, to where he relaxed his body to the point that it was not creating any type of problem for him. You know, you relax your, in fact, Swamiji's led meditation, so often he'll say, you know, put your thumbs, hands like this, with your fingers like this, and then you need to relax to the degree that you can't feel them anymore. Your body is so relaxed that the outline and the contours of the body just disappear. You know, your eyes are closed and the body's so relaxed as though it just simply disappears. And then your mind is allowed to just simply relax and quieten down. And the focus, the body's not calling on you anymore. Your focus goes more and more just to your own being. Your mind is totally relaxed and not judgmental, not engaging in anything, just simply being. And then focusing just on your own presence, the very self of the mind. It's like the pot focusing totally on the clay. Your mind is focusing totally on just the awareful being that you are. To the point that in your experience at that time, all that is there in terms of experience is the self-evident conscious being that you are. Because there's no sense organs or mind or body that is being perceived or used, right? The body is so relaxed that there's no way to even to feel its contours. You know, the mind is so relaxed and allowed to be as it is that it floats out relaxed into space as though. And then that totally relaxed, non-judgmental mind is then just allowed to focus on its own being, its own content. Until then, what is actually filling the mind at that time, this relaxed, quiet mind, what is filling it when it focuses on its own content is only its own content, is only awareness. Whereas now, see, if my eyes are open, it's the same me, same presence, same awareness, but with a mind that is using my eyes to have this panorama of this room and everybody in it. All right, so right now, I have my being, the mind, which is using the sense organs, using my sense organs, in order to have a thought modification of this room. So I have me, plus the names and forms of the room. That's the experience. Right? Now, and that's because I'm using the mind and the sense organs and I'm engaged in it. Now, the instant I shut my eyes, all of this goes. It's very simple. You shut your eyes, it is gone. Simple. You know? So, shut your eyes, it's gone. You know? And now, as your mind relaxes, and instead of trying to engage with the world, it is instead the mind, instead of using the sense organs to have a thought modification true to the room, it's focused on its own content. Right? And so the mind, in its act of focusing on its own content, the conscious being, which has the mind, right? Then what happens? What's the experience? It's just of me. There's no subject-object duality anymore. There's no, right? There's no perception of anything. And yet there's, what is there is the self-evident me that fills all perception, right? But there's no subject-object. You understand what I mean? That's why when we say consciousness is self-evident, you know, it is its own experience. You don't need, it doesn't require, consciousness doesn't want, require, or think about having an experience. It is consciousness, and it is complete and whole unto itself. Without, when we think of mind, the mind is something that is illumined as though, it's something that is always changing. You know, it's something that uses the sense organs in order to have subject-object duality. And so now it's engaged in difference, and it looks around using the body. It looks around and sees things that are different from me. And all of these vikalpas, all of this duality rises up because you are a dual part. You are a character, a part of a whole. And you are engaged in the whole, and you want to know if you have any viveka, if you have an inquiry in mind, you want to know what's going on. And if you're a mamukshi, you want to know, who am I and what am I doing here and is there a God? And all of these questions are coming up. But from the standpoint just of your being, these questions aren't there. The vikalpas aren't there. The duality isn't there. What is there is my own simple presence. And is that presence, what is the nature of me? What is the nature of that presence? Is it good or bad? Who's going to say that? You're sitting with yourself, you know? You're just being yourself. The mind has to wake up and say, now, is this experience good or bad? Is this what they mean by ananda and all these type of things? That's all taking place within the meadow, within duality. But from the standpoint of just myself, there's no questioning like that. There isn't even a creation. You think, you shut your eyes, there's no name and form. You plug your ears, there's no sound. Now, if you take your sense organs, these sense organs away one by one by one, you know, there's no perception of the creation. If you turn your mind, your thinking mind, if you quieten it down and turn it toward the self, then where is the perception of the creation, or the body, or the mind, or the sense organs? And so for Ramana, he would just sit with himself. And then what he has to say about that is, this self that I am is what everybody's seeking. This is what everybody wants to know. Mm-hmm. Everybody wants to realize this, that I actually, as I am changeless, whole, complete, and not wanting anything. That I am full and complete in my own nature. And so here he just says, you know, all of these questions, all of these vivadas, you know, all of this seeking, you know, questioning, is it like this or is it like this or like this, it's all useless because all of it is taking place within the duality. In the end, what has to happen is that you have to recognize the one that is the changeless self of that whole duality, and that one isn't questioning at all. That's his standpoint. That's why for Ramana, for those of you who know a little bit about him, what Ramana is always doing is saying, you know, to his students, who's asking the question? Now, who's asking the question? Ask you, who am I? Who am I? Who is the one asking the question? Because he wants for you to get to the reality of what it is that you're seeking, which is your own nature, and that one is not asking a question, that one simply is. Yeah? So you get into who's asking the question, it becomes the mind that is illumined, the sense organs that are illumined. Myself, when you get to the, when you kind of follow the track of that back, you get to just the conscious being, right? That itself is abiding without any vikalpa. The one self that is abiding without any vikalpa, which is absolutely full, right? And which is what all of these different darshanas, these different schools of thought are seeking. Right? And that one isn't asking any questions, right? So that's what he's saying. So let's go to the next verse. It continues on with this. The same thing. Sarupa buddhir jagatishware cha. Sarupa buddhir jagatishware cha. Sarupa dhiratmani yavarasti. Sarupa dhiratmani yavarasti. Arupa atma yadika prapashet. Arupa atma yadika prapashet. Sadrishtireka navadhir hipurna. Sadrishtireka navadhir hipurna. Sa rupa buddhihi. It's a compound. Sarupa buddhihi. Jagati ishware. You can say jagat ishware cha. Jagat ishware cha. Jagati Ishvarecha Sarupadihi Atmani Yavat Asti Arupa Atma Yadi Kaha Prapashet Sadrishtihi Eka Anavadihi Hi Purana. Here he says Jagati Ishvarecha, in reference to this world, the Jagat, and to Ishvara. So regarding Jagat, the world, and regarding the Lord, Sarupa Buddhihi, that giving them a form, they're having a form, sa means with, Rupa Dihi, the vritti, the conception, the notion that they have a form. In reference to the Lord and in reference to the creation, you see them as having a form. When? He says, Sarupa dihi atmani yavat asti. As long as you give yourself a form. As long as you see the atmani in regarding the self, yavat, as long as there is for you regarding your own self, sarupa dihi. You have the concept of yourself as having a form. It means I am the body, mind, sense organs. So that's how you see yourself. Then you see, if you, as long as you see yourself as having a form, then for that long you will see the Lord and the Jagat and the Lord as having a form. This is the Jagat, that is Ishwar, like maybe in the form of Krishna. There's the Lord there. Here's the creation with all of its forms. And here am I with my form. So as long as you take your being to have a form, then there's this Jagat that has a form and Ishwar that has a form. He said, then he says, but if arupaha atma yadi, he says, but if the atma is arupaha, if you see yourself, right, if the self has no form, if the atma has no form, then he says, kaha prapashet, who would see this? Prapashyate means who would see it? Kaha means who? Who would see this? If the Atma, right, if the Atma is arupa, it has no form, then who is there to see it?
Mm.
Right? Then he says, sa drishtihi, sa that drishti, that vision. Drishti means that vision. That vision is eka, anavadihi, ipurana. That vision is anavadihi. It is limitless, and it is purna. It is absolutely full. It doesn't have, that vision has no boundaries, and it is purna, means it is absolutely full. It is infinite in and of itself. No boundaries, and purna means anand, absolutely full. And so, here again, it's the same vision in just another form. For Ramana, well, let me say it like this. All of the Upanishads and the Bhagavad Gita are giving the jiva who has self-ignorance, giving this teaching to the jiva who has self-ignorance in so many different ways. Because the jiva is this person born into this duality who is experiencing all of this subject-object in the universe, so who's totally involved in experiencing this duality. This is the jiva that needs to gain knowledge. Right? And Ramana, who's been spending, you know, years sitting in nirvikalpa samadhi, says, you don't need this. You don't need this at all. Yourself as you are is completely free. Don't bother with this. The one who has the question, this is a standpoint. In Vedanta, we'll come in from a lot of different standpoints, but Ramana's, this is Ramana's major standpoint. You know, myself, I am completely free. The self that's wanting to know all of this, your nature, is absolutely free. It is eka. It is absolutely, says, drishtihi eka. This drishtihi, this knowledge, this vision, is eka. It is one without a second. It is purana. It is absolutely whole and complete. Your being is whole and complete as you are. It is boundless. There is no limitation to yourself. There's no extension. There's no subject-object duality. There's no parts. There's no limit. The conscious being that you are is everything you've ever wanted to be. It's everything that you want to seek in the creation. And so here, what he wants is you're doing all of this inquiry. Right? You're doing all of this inquiry. But what you have to, this inquiry that you're doing, all right. But in the end, this inquiry has to resolve into yourself. If you're asking the question, if you take the one who's asking the question to be an embodied, means I myself is this body, mind, sense organs, then I have a dual relationship with the creation, because I do. Your body, mind, sense organs, this person here, has a dual relationship with this creation and with the Lord. Like, this body, mind, sense organs is not Ishwara. It's part of Ishwara, but it's not Ishwara. This body, mind, sense organs, this conscious being, is also not the rug. Right? It's not the chair. It's not the space. It's not the creation. It's not you. And so, as long as I take myself to be an embodied being, I exist within time and space. I'm subject to birth and death, and I'm subject to all of this duality, and it's perfectly reasonable. Right? What else are you going to say? The instant you say, I'm a limited being, that I'm a limited being with name and form, then definitely I'm dealing with many other limited beings who have name and form. And definitely, I am one limited being within this total complex that we call the jagat. Right? And if there is a Lord, I'm different than that Lord. I know very well that I'm not the Lord. And so, this type of inquiry, you know, is endless, actually. And if this inquiry is keeping me in this duality, then it's not going to resolve anything. Everything that you thought you were as a limited being subject to birth and death, different than the Lord, and existing as a conscious being within a jagat that doesn't seem to be conscious, because you're conscious and you're conscious, but I don't say the rug is conscious. So that's what everybody experiences. But now he says, so you're right. If you see yourself as this, then you're going to see the Jagat and Ishwara. But now what? What if you see yourself as without form? So I can see Ramana saying, what if you're without form as I am? What if you see yourself as Arupa? Means the conscious being that you are is not a form. Yeah. Then where is the limitation? If you are the me, the conscious being that you are, the me, the very personal me, is Arupa, doesn't have a form. Then you take off the body, you take off the mind, you take off the sense organs, you take off the ahankara, you take off the I thought, you take off all forms completely, right? And you are, then what is limiting you? What is limiting you? Because if you have no form, there is no limitation, you know? And if there is no form, that means you have no eyes. That means you have no ears. You have no sense of touch. You have no sense of taste. You have no sense of smell. You have no mind. Right? You have no mind. You have no ahankara. Right? And so what are you seeing? What are you, the awareful being, the me? What are you seeing? If you see something, you have to bring in the mind. You have to bring in the sense organs. Right? And then you can perceive the world. But if you have no form, what are you perceiving?
Yourself.
You're perceiving yourself, but not in a subject object, because, right, that's why we say, instead of perceiving or experiencing yourself, we say swaprakasha. Your being, or swata siddham, your being is self-evident, self-luminous. You just simply are. You are your own light. Consciousness is its own light. Consciousness is its own consciousness. So the self-experience that you are is the self-experience that you are that is not being illumined by anyone. Now, if there's no ahankara, there's no eye notion, there's no mind, there's no sense organs, right, because you're arupa, and you simply are, what is your form? Well, there's no form. What does that mean to be no form? To be and to be no form.
There's no death.
There's no birth, there's no death, there's no change, there's no limitation. Right. Just think of this, like when we use the meadow imagination. If I ask you to imagine a meadow and put some people in it and some animals in it, and put the sky and the sun and the clouds in it, so you have this beautiful meadow imagination, everything, the duality that is being experienced is confined to the meadow. The duality and the subject-object relationships exist in the meadow. Right? Even if you take, if from a Vedantic standpoint, what we say is Ishwara. Ishwara is the consciousness in the form of the meadow, in the sense that the whole meadow is like a manifestation of knowledge. Right? Like if I say, imagine the ocean. You have an ocean imagination, that's a manifestation of knowledge. Imagine a meadow. You have a meadow manifestation, that's a manifestation of knowledge, that image. Because it comes from your knowledge. It comes from the unmanifest into the manifest. So if we're saying for Ishwara, the whole infinite creation is an infinite manifestation of infinite knowledge. Because the whole creation is known. That's what makes Ishwara. So we have Ishwara, this, as Vedanta will unfold it, as Upanishad will unfold it. We have the whole manifest creation, which is infinite knowledge. And then within that creation are all of the jivas. Yeah. The jivas aren't outside of the meadow. You're staying with the meadow analogy. The jivas are within the meadow, within the time-space of the meadow. The Ishwara perception is the manifestation of knowledge, but that requires the meadow to be there. Right? Or the jivas are experiencing the meadow through their sense organs and their mind. But the whole experience, the whole duality, with all of the change, all of the birth and death, all of the variations, all take place within that manifestation of duality, the manifestation of the meadow. Now, from my standpoint, the being, the conscious being from whom the meadow has come, from the standpoint of just me, the consciousness, where is the meadow? From just the standpoint of consciousness, I'm not seeing the meadow from the standpoint of consciousness. I'm not the individual that belongs to the, in the sense that, let me put it this way. From this is Satyam Mithya. The meadow is consciousness, in that it comes from consciousness, is sustained by consciousness, and resolves into consciousness. So it has no being apart from me, apart from consciousness. But I am not the meadow. Because the meadow comes and goes. I remain. So I am the Satyam. I am what is real. And my being is free of the meadow. And my being is free of everyone in the meadow, including one I might be identified with. And so from the standpoint of just me, the conscious being, where is there any experience, any perception of the meadow or of the body, mind, sense organs, which is part of the meadow? Where is that perception? So now let's just bring this home a little bit. When I look at what you do when you meditate, because most people have a meditative practice of one form or another, look at what you do. And it seems perfectly normal to you. You know, it's actually very weird. But if you really think about it, what do? You sit quietly, you relax your body, you get into yourself into a quiet place, you relax your body, you pour your sense organs in, your mind in, until you have removed yourself, removed the experience of the meadow. Remove the experience of the creation. Remove the experience of the body. Remove the experience of the sense organs. Remove the experience of the mind. And then, what is there? No subject-object experience. Just the self, the content, the reality, the truth of all experience. The changeless truth of all experience, which is me. And that me never wavers. And so for somebody like Ramana, whose teaching is always really from this perspective, over and over, all of these verses, you'll see they all say just about the same thing in many different creative ways, you know, to try to make you see that all of this fine. In the Upanishads, we spend a lot of time in the meadow, a lot of time in the creation, so that the jiva can understand that this body, mind, sense organs is part and parcel of Ishvara, conscious being, right? And that the ahankara of the individual, of the jiva, is not really needed. That this body, mind, sense organs is like a cell in the body. It's like a cell in Ishvara's body. It's taken care of by its Ishvara, you know? You think it's me, and you have to then, you know, work so hard to make everything go right for you. You know? But once you understand that this is Ishvara, and Ishvara is taking care of it, and your life comes into your life, you're born and you go through your life and you die and you take on another life. The jiva goes on and on like this. All according to and all held within the laws of the whole. That this is one being, and this body is a part of it. And this whole one being of this creation has me for itself. So Ishvara is me, in fact. Not this body, mind, sense organs. Body, mind, sense organs is part of Ishvara. But the self of Ishvara is this me from whom the whole creation has come. But from the standpoint of just me, there isn't a creation. Where's the creation? From my standpoint. And I am the one that everyone seeks. I am the Ananda. I am the wholeness. I am the fullness. I am the one I love to be with. That's why we all love sleep. And deep sleep is late, the lazy man's samadhi. Just go to sleep. We love to go to sleep. Swamiji goes on and on about the nice pillows and comforters, and, you know, moon gets right, temperature, everything is perfect, lie back. And get rid of it all. Get rid of it all. You know? I love that. Just look at what happens. You go into deep sleep. I'm not talking dream. You go into deep sleep. Oh, I can't wait. Let me just totally check out. Instead of just being with myself completely. Samadhi, nirvikalpa samadhi, meditation, same thing. Let me just withdraw, you know. and just be with me. Why? Because it is the absolute unencumbered Ananda. And so you're all staying around in here and getting, you know,
knocked around
and engaged in all this, you know, as though this matters. As though this matters at all, when in fact your being, that you are, the self that you are, is absolutely whole and free. Just close your eyes. You know, he doesn't say it exactly like that, but there's more. His whole teaching methodology is to make you just go to yourself, and then when you recognize the wholeness of your own being, why do you even care? Why do you care? You know? But in fact, we do care. You know, most people care. Most people need to have all of these answers. They need to understand in order to really be able to let go of the jiva, let the jiva resolve into Ishvara. Ramana, you know, was an unusual person. Really. You know, he had that capacity, you know, who knows what his previous births were like, but this one, you know, he was ready just to be, you know, resolved into it, to himself completely. And then in fact, as they say, you know, when some pundits came and wanted to teach him the Upanishads because they thought that he should know, you know. So there's a lot of stories around about that. But when they taught him, it was like telling him what he absolutely knew. But there was one difference that happened when he was taught those Upanishads, is that he realized that actually with your eyes opened or closed, it doesn't make any difference. Why do you have to have it? As long as you have this body, mind, sense organs, what difference does it make if your eyes are open or closed? When really the only thing that is here is consciousness, is myself. You know, because what difference does it make? If you just try it, you have your eyes open and then close them, and then open and close, and say your mind isn't creating any problem for you. What is the difference? Form, you have with form, without form, with form, and without form. The forms are not really an addition to what is, you know. So that's a very nice meditation, in fact, just if you can see that, you know, your eyes are open and there's all of this, and they're closed and this isn't there, but everything that is the self of all of this is exactly the same. So it's nice even to, you know, do walking meditations, where as you're walking around, you notice that all of this changing experience is taking place and has for itself something that is whole and complete and full. And so for somebody like Ramana, the mind is more, how would you say, I don't know how to say it exactly. It's like this is fine and beautiful and it's Ishvara, but it's not an addition. It's not necessary because of my own nature is what is changeless and pervasive, and it's my own nature that is whole and complete. And so I can engage in this as long as my prarabdha is there, but the universe, the entire universe, is not an addition to myself. And I think that as time goes on, that becomes kind of the lived reality, that this is what it is, and you're engaged in it according to your prarabdha, you know, you can enjoy it and all of that, but it's not something that's an addition to myself. We understand that in reference to the dream. We usually don't think that the dream, it is what it is, and it can be very interesting and you can get engaged in all that. But it's not yourself. It's not an addition to yourself. It's Maya, you know. And so you don't think of it like that. If you wake up from a dream, you don't go into mourning. You know, even if you were to say, oh, that was such a good dream, I really wish I could have finished that, maybe I can go back into it, if you know how to do that, you know, go and see what would have happened there, like watching a movie or something. But you don't go into mourning over the loss of the dream, because nothing has really happened. You know, and you know that. Nothing has really happened at all. And so that becomes your understanding in reference to this creation as you gain that type of that type of vairagya, you know, where this doesn't, and that doesn't, I mean, Ramana was engaged in the world, mm-hmm. in his ashram and with his little cow and everything, Lakshmi.
Nandi. Or was it Lakshmi?
And he did lots of things. But, you know, there's also the fact of it, and the fact of it is what the way that he saw it, based upon his who he was and his own experience, you know, his own life. That's the way it was for him. And so Ramana wasn't really trained in all of the teaching methodology that's involved in taking a student from point A, where you're just a jiva in the world, and is there any other truth that you could tell me? Maybe say, you know, all of the teaching methodologies that the Upanishads have up their sleeve to, you know, as tools to help the students. He didn't go through all of that. In fact, the pundits just told him the Upanishad, and he said, yeah, that's what it is, that's right. You know, he was like, yes, you're saying that correctly. And so when you study some of Ramana's books, you know, what he's unfolding this vision, but he's unfolding it very much from his own standpoint. That's why he's not spending so much time, mm-hmm. you know, in the kind of the jiva ishwar jagat relationship, which can be very, very important, like to make a student understand, because most of us come with all different levels of questions and different levels of things that have to be sorted out, different things, you know, emotional things, all kinds of things that need to be sorted out and put in their proper place. And so the Upanishads do all of that so thoroughly, you know. But Ramana stayed more toward just making you go to the truth of it all. Very non-dual. Not even non-dual. That's not quite even the right word. We can look at this whole universe and say, this is nothing but Brahman. That's non-dual. That's the reality of non-dual. This is only Brahman. This is only myself. I am Ishwara. But for Ramana, it was like, why do you even bother? You know? I am whole. Consciousness is whole. Be there. Realize that. And this doesn't matter. You know? So you see that so absolute perspective in his verses. That's why they're very beautiful to see, because he makes you go there completely. So that's enough for this. Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamadachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavashishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om.
Ramana, he wrote this.
And another one that we usually teach, this one in Upadeshasaram. He has others too, where they're most, I don't know what other texts he has. Those are the ones that Swamiji usually teaches. But he has lots of, there's lots of books that his disciples made dialogues with him and things like that. There's quite a few of them.
But these are the only two that he actually wrote, though, that you mentioned.
No, there might be more. Those are the two I know of and the ones that Swamiji always teaches.
Maybe they are.
I just don't know for sure. They're the ones that I know about. And the other things I've seen are the different kinds of dialogues.
Yeah, lots of questions and answers.
But if there's other texts, there might be other.
It's kind of funny that the pundits had to tell him that he could open his eyes. I mean, he didn't discover that, right?
I don't really know the details of that, but it's a nice story because it's a story that's told, it's a story that gives a real message, you know, because people can think that in order to be with yourself, you have to be in Nirvikalpa Samadhi. And that then that differentiates your being from this world, as though this world is one thing and the self is another. But just like the clay pot isn't a clay and a pot, there's no self and this. You know, as though this has any type of substance away from your being. And so that's the point of that story.
I don't know what. I found this talk today a little bit depressing. I don't know why. I had a strong reaction for it. Like, I felt kind of like a little bit what you're talking about, the separation from the world. A little bit like, so what does it matter, you know? I closed my eyes and opened up my eyes and it doesn't really influence, and I took it to the other place of like, so what's the point of what we're doing here in some level?
Yeah. You know, I think when Ramana is teaching, he's not trying to emphasize that kind of to negate the world. But I totally know, I think I understand what you're saying, but I don't think that's what he's trying to do. He's trying to make you see that the wholeness that you are, you know, is absolutely whole and complete, and that this is not an addition to that in reality. Then the thing is that we're all living here. As long as you have a body, you know, you are living here within this reality. And so you have to know how to function with the interpersonal relationships. I mean, there's a lot of richness in this reality, in this level of reality, you know. And so he's not dealing with that. Or with the subject-object or the interpersonal relationships or what is dharma. You know, what is the Lord from this perspective? You know, he's saying that in reality, the wholeness that you are, you know, doesn't require any of that. And it doesn't. It doesn't require anything. Consciousness never changes. It's not like you're making yourself better or worse from the standpoint of consciousness. You see what I mean?
Yeah, but it makes it feel like just like a God's game or something like that. That it doesn't matter what is happening in this reality, because there is this other, it's basically the conscious being that you are, that is the truth, and all the rest is just a game that we're like small soldier, and you can do this or you can do that, and it doesn't really matter.
But the problem is with that, you know, and that's why the Upanishads go into such detail, it actually does matter a lot to the one who's in the creation. In other words, I can say, my being is absolutely free. And it's not just words, you really recognize the wholeness of yourself. And so, since I'm so free, you know, I'm going to just put my hand in fire. You know, I'm not going to put my hand in fire, no matter how free I am. Even if I can put my hand in fire and suffer the pain of it and still recognize at the same time that I'm whole and complete, I'm still not going to do it, right? And I'm still not going to savor being engaged in some level of a dharma so that, which would cause all kinds of, you know, problems and pain. So I'm not going to ever say, let me just do this a dharma. Because the pain that I experience doesn't really matter. Because as long as I have this body, mind, sense organs, it does really matter. And so I can experience the pain of the Adharma at the same time have the Swarta Siddha, my own self-evident, untarnished being, illumining that pain, right? But in reality, we don't want that pain. Right? What we want is a jiva. You want to be, have your behavior be held by Dharma, and to have enough kaushalam or skill in the world to be handling the world in such a way that doesn't create havoc for you or others. Okay. Now, if I don't know, this is the problem of all beings, actually, until they have self-knowledge. If I don't know that the source of all the ananda I experience in the world is my being, if I don't know that, then it's very difficult to live within Dharma, because for myself, I don't know that I'm the source of Dharma, and that means that I have to project that ananda out on the world. And what that means is I need that in order to be happy, and you're trying to get it. And so I may not, you know, hit you, but it's hard to kind of control my mind and my feelings when somebody is trying to take away from me what I need to be happy, you know. This is samsara, just right? This is what it is. Mm-hmm. I need this, whether it be a healthy body or this person or this job or this type of response from others. I need all of these things in order to be happy. You know, so once I don't, once my mind is settled in the ananda itself, then I can participate fully and freely in the world and enjoy the world and enjoy this infinite manifestation. You have to remember that this, we're looking from the absolute standpoint of just consciousness, right? But consciousness has this maya that expresses in this infinite creation. That's what we call Ishwara. Is that pure consciousness, the me, the very self, that manifest, that has maya, that manifests as this infinite creation, the whole of which is known. Or just like your meadow is known. Right? Absolutely. Whatever you imagine, that is a manifestation of knowledge and it is known. So the infinite creation is that. It is known, the whole entire thing. That's what we mean by Ishwara. And there's something, I mean, it is an infinite intelligence that's inconceivable. You know, the complexity of that whole thing. And here we are as a jiva walking through it. Right? So that's a wonder. That's why a person who has knowledge is a bhakta. You know, a jnani, one who has self-knowledge is a bhakta, because this creation is something extraordinary. You know, and so there is total engagement and enjoyment of the world. But that's because the real source of the ananda is something that can't be touched. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it almost sounds like the liberation is not from the world, but in order to be in the world with, like, I don't know the words that come to me, is in flow, that you're not a struggle with what's happening.
That's right.
You know, it's not, you don't want to go to a different reality, but you can be in peace in the reality that is existing.
Absolutely. That's what we mean by vairagya, in fact. Vairagya, you know, they translate it as dispassion. But actually, it's just the Swamiji always uses the example of a child with helium balloon versus an adult with a helium balloon. You know, both are going to lose their balloon, right? It's just how it is. But the child, it's a big thing. And for the adult, it isn't. It was fun having it, and it's fun watching it go, or isn't that interesting how it just kind of loses its air? We don't care. Now we can be present to the whole thing. What about when it's like that for the whole world? You know? That you have the freedom to love, to care, you know? Because your well-being isn't at stake. If my well-being is at stake, then you have to be a certain way. In order for me to be happy, I married you because you were like this, and now you're like this. That's not who I married.
So it's really a question of locating the source of wholeness, or this, your own being, rather than trying to find it.
Yeah, it's recognition. It's recognition. Because what is the truth is already there. It's not away from you. So it's not a matter of finding or discovering or traveling to. It's a matter of recognizing. Mm. You know? And then you recognize, and then here you are. You know? I mean, just this, that's why I love my meadow. I love the meadow. But just think of the yourself in the meadow, you know? And then you recognize what the whole thing is, and you're still there in the meadow. Mm-hmm. And that is an amazing situation. Mm-hmm. Because you recognize that you are the self of the whole meadow. The meadow is yourself, is Ishwara. That's total knowledge. The meadow is total knowledge. But you also have a form as a jiva. You know? That's why sometimes I like to think of experience life like this. You never know really in your life what's around the corner, or why this happened, or why that happened, or why this is going on. But if you see yourself placed in this self, placed in this big self, you know, this all yourself, the whole thing is yourself. This is an infinite manifestation of knowledge. And say if you appreciate that, then you can see how the yourself as Ishwara, because it's not some foreign being, not somebody else, is handling this situation, how this infinite knowledge is balancing and dealing with the situation, which you find yourself in the middle with your limited knowledge. And so we're used to kind of being the conscious being in an inert creation, rather the conscious being in an intelligent creation, infinitely intelligent creation, and this creation is so complex. But if you think about it, like if you keep that in mind when you're analyzing your situation or the situation that you find the world in, you know, and with all of that complexity, and just watch how it all is all playing out.
It's humbling.
Mm-hmm. Very overwhelming. I mean, it says something incredible. It's incredibly. Humbling is a good word. Yeah. But even to look at your life like that, as the life as being part of a conscious whole, rather than your life, this individual life, being part of a conscious whole that's unfolding, and you're part of that unfoldment. Your prarabdha itself, the karmas that brought you into this life and take you through your death, are a movement of something that includes your body. And it's not just your body. The prarabdha karma isn't just your body going through life. It's the whole flow of your reality going from birth to death. Subject-object reality, I mean the reality that is containing you, is the prarabdha that's moving along with you through your life. That's why we would say, like all of these people, that with all of us here together, we have interconnected prarabdha. Yeah.
And how is it seen wrongly then? I mean, I can appreciate what you just said, but normally?
Where you see yourself as just a conscious pocket in an inert world with a God on high looking down to see how you're doing.
Separate.
Everything's separate. And the world is basically inert, and you're a conscious being having to carve your way through it, rather than you're part of a greater story. If you're part of a greater story, then you can relax into it, you know, and then respond to your life. Respond to the unfoldment of your life and respond to it dharmically. You know, that's it for us, mumukshu. That's your sadhana, really, is to respond to this creation dharmically, you know, in light of your knowledge. In order to, it's just one of the things that helps to kind of resolve all of the conflicts in the mind and the reactions that we have.
You know, that's actually interesting, because it's like, in a way, the Gita, I was just thinking, you know, the Gita and this whole discussion, like, of Sukha and Dukkha and Dharma and how it's all interrelated and, yeah. and how to really get into right relationship with that.
Yeah.
Right relationship. It feels like that, and I felt that since day one was Ramana Maharshi when I read him the first time 20 years ago, you know, I felt like there is this absolute vision, and when one really looks at it, one can really find the truth of that. It's true. Mm-hmm. Yes, and it is just like as if there's a certain disassociate that happens. You know, it's like in order to drop in that nirvikalpa samadhi mm-hmm. Vision, you need to kind of disconnect from this world. And I feel like the Gita...
And he did that for a long time. Ramana did.
Yeah, the Gita, I just feel like from my own personal experience, the Gita helps me much more to actually really line my ducks up in terms of bringing the two worlds together and synchronize them
yeah.
in my own...
Inner yeah, yeah. That's being. Right. And that's why I say, that's why it's so, that story is so important, that finally Ramana realized he didn't have to sit in nirvikalpa mm-hmm. samadhi, that he could actually engage and be a person in the world and mm-hmm. nothing was lost. To me, for me that's significant because it's bringing him back to the world. He doesn't have this kind of yogic stance of having to stay in samadhi all the time in order to be mm-hmm. liberated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, that he can be a person, he can be engaged in the world, and that from that point on he was. Mm-hmm. He didn't bother with any of that anymore, as the story goes. Which we weren't there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's just experiencing that. It's really helpful for Vairagya to have the recognition that Maya, if you recognize that all of this is Maya, that it's a zero-sum game.
What does that mean?
What?
A zero-sum game. Like, there's nothing that you're going to create in addition to what is already here, and you can't do anything about what is already here. And there's just this constant kind of shifting where the energy is. That somehow I just felt it has to be gotten and is gotten for me over time on so many different levels, the recognition that really nothing is gained and really nothing is lost.
Well, that's absolutely true for yourself.
Even I wonder, I was understanding it on the level of the creation. I mean, from, I guess, Einstein said conservation of matter.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
So like on that level, that even from the standpoint of the entire creation.
I think that's true even on that level, but the problem is are these fleeting experiences that we have of pleasure and pain that we'd rather not have. You know, and so you can say from one standpoint, nothing is gained and nothing is lost. But the emotions that come and go take us through kind of a hell ride, you know, even though in reality it's like if you have a dream, a nightmare dream, nothing's really happened. But pain is pain, you know.
For sure. The pain arises, and then for me, there's a reaction to that pain, and a lot of that affect is generated by what is normally mostly an unconscious idea that there is something to be gained or lost.
Yeah, that's true. I see what you mean. That's right. That's right. That's the whole thing. That's why knowledge is so valuable, because it changes your whole perspective, you know, around what it is that we're seeking. And so our attitude totally changes our relationship to what produces pleasure and pain. Doesn't produce it anymore because of the way we're relating to it. Is that what you're saying? More or less?
Yeah. But also it just seems like it has to keep arising these things arise, and that knowledge has to be there for every potential source of pain that's based on belief that's very unconscious, and then that comes up in the life of
your knowledge,
and it's like every one of those things has to come up in the light of your knowledge if it's there, and it's
and as it comes up in the light of your knowledge, then that is something which breaks it apart or diffuses it.
I mean, so I don't know if I'm just imagining this, but there seems to be, like, the more you really understand the whole vision of Vedanta, the more the charge of Susukha and Dukkha also tremendously decreases.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because there's a certain kind of, oh yeah, these are like nuances of experience now, instead of like polarity in between you just being bounced back and forth, you know, which seems like very destabilizing as a human experience, you know, to have these like strong fluctuation of experience. So anyway, that's just...
That's true, but I think the mind stops seeking sukha.
Yeah, maybe that's what
it is. Stops seeking it, because the nature of your being, the anand of your being, is more than the sukha. You don't care so much about it. Mm-hmm. You know? Not that there's anything wrong with it, but it's not, there's not somebody trying to get it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because the wholeness of your being is more than that. Let's stop.
Mm.